It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Sorry about last night. Now my week's all screwed up. I think it's Monday. It's not. It's Tuesday. It's the 12th day of February, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's the easiest place to go and get the stream. Although you can also get the stream at places like TuneIn and Stitcher on Roku devices and also at Spotify, I think. So lots of different opportunities. Podcasting, of course, at White Rose Society, as well as at podbean.com, okay? Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and like I said, I'm terribly, terribly sorry about last night, but Agnes had some minor surgery yesterday, and that necessitated, not being here last night. She's fine, she's okay, she's a little uncomfortable. See, that's the thing. When they use a phrase like minor surgery, it still means you're going to hurt. There's no painless surgery. So she's okay, but it's still, yeah. And all is well and all is right with the world, et cetera, et cetera. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do that? I'm not sure if I did that. Well, I did that. And yes, it is Trumptanic Tuesday. And, yeah, we missed a whole boatload of morons yesterday, but since it's Trumptanic, Titanic Tuesday, I think we'll be able to do some catch-up work, to say the very least. But before we do anything else, we have thank yous to send out. Oh, absolutely. Thanks to our subscribers, partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to Paul. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly. It was, I really enjoyed meeting Paul at the Malloy hoedown a couple of months back. Thanks as well to Mark. Thank you, Mark. And thank you to Angelica. Thank you so very much for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks to James. And thanks to Gary in New York. Thank you very much indeed. Let's see here. Let's go back for some. And thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown, and Tony and Chico. Thank you very kindly to, doggone it, I hate it when I just have an initial, S, but thank you to S, and the other part is the last name, and we try to use first names only here. It is, after all, the interweb tubes, and there are, after all, nasty-ass white wingers that hang out in the crannies and corners and stuff, so thank you. Thank you as well to Mary Bell. Thanks to Christopher. And thank you to John. And thank you to Libby as well. By the way, a couple of extra thank yous. Thank you to our buddy Otto. Otto jumped in on the deficit. And so did Glenn. And I have a nice note from Glenn to share that I think you might like. I'm seeing some skipped payments. That's just what that's how PayPal sends me the messaging. Check and see if you think you've subscribed and you haven't heard your name. Check to make sure that it went go through. I make mistakes, and sometimes for reasons that I don't fully understand, PayPal just skips subscriptions. I wish I knew why. But we have other thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to Daniel and to Don with two N's. Thank you, Don. And thank you to Judy. Thank you, Judy. As well, thank you to our dear friend Khalil. Sorry, my bad. Thank you, Khalil. And thank you to Kathleen. So I think that's pretty much the entire weekend's worth. Now, where are we? Well, this is the problem. We're at thanks to Glenn and Tim, we are not as bad off as we would have been, and we are so that means that we had a $70 deficit from last week, and we took that. So $435 is the fundraising goal. $435 just to get even through this far into February. But I did mention before we jump into the jackassery. I mentioned that I had a lovely little note, came from Glenn, and among other things, GP, we will know him as GP from San Diego henceforward, if he should happen to, like, wander into the chat room or something like that. By the way, chat room's up and running, open, and the conversation is running. If you pick out a screen name and a password, you'll be greeted by Otto and Squeaky. Others will be wandering by. You know, this happens every time I miss a program. People just think, oh, Bob's gone forever. Well, no. But folks will be wandering by. If you jump in, the conversation will be that much better. GP in San Diego wrote to say, just wanted to drop you a line to let you know how much I appreciate you, your show, and the Horn Community Congregation. Much to my joy and regret, I've been listening for only about 3 years. I believe you were celebrating your 12th anniversary at the time. I started listening, and I only wish I'd found you years sooner. I have Billable Rick to thank. Thank you, Rick, for mentioning you on air while calling into the Norman Goldman Show, turning me on to what is now my daily fix of the most enjoyable, edifying, entertaining, compelling, comforting, belly-laugh-inducing broadcasting America has to offer. Lake Wobegon has nothing on the Horn Community Congregation. Members of the community, including you, Bob, are like characters out of any great American novel, except that you're all real, living, breathing, heart-thumping human beings, living your real lives and professing it on the stage of the Head On Radio Network. I love you all. And by the way, let's see here. There's some other stuff in there that doesn't pertain to, good idea. GP closes saying, I really appreciate your taking time to read this. Meantime, I'll send to you through PayPal the grandiose sum of $20 acquired through the beneficence of our inglorious justice system here in California for serving two entire days of jury duty. I don't think we've ever had a jury duty challenge before. That's awesome. Thank you, GP, and thanks for the kind words. The fact of the matter is, it's the community that makes this all so special. And thanks for recognizing that, GP. Thank you very much indeed. Steve in New York, meanwhile, says, I'm sorry, but minor surgery is like low-tar cigarettes. Yeah, I get it. Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh with a note to get us started for this Titanic Tuesday. I'm tired, is the subject line. Much like the Teutonic Titwillow Lily von Stupp, I'm tired. Representative Ilhan Omar tweets about the outsized influence of AIPAC on American politics, and everybody and their mama jumps on her back. She's forced to apologize by Miss Nancy. Everyone says she used anti-Semitic tropes. What the fuck is an anti-Semitic trope? After listening to some punk-ass Republican representative from New Jersey, every negative statement about Israel is an anti-Semitic trope, therefore you cannot criticize Israel. The U.S. is the battered wife in our relationship with Israel. Bibi Netanyahu, in a speech a while ago, said that America is a thing which can be handled. I'm tired of our weak-kneed, noodle-spined, gutless treatment of Israel. I'm starting to agree with Tricky Dick.
It's the Jews, Billy, the Jews.
Well, it's the Israelis, Billy, the Israelis. I think we do the idea of anti-Semitism, which is very real, a great disservice when we conflate the reality of that hatred with criticism of, as Ron describes it, the outsized influence of AIPAC, because they do have outsized influence. There's Israel, a fully modern state, and, you know, still, I guess, dependent on American workers propping them up with our tax dollars. They get to go to the doctor when they're sick. We don't. Isn't that just galling? But the fact of the matter is, it is... the sort of thing that anti-Semitism really is. Like, say, when a Trump supporter with a handful of weapons goes into a synagogue on a baby naming ceremony and slaughters indiscriminately people for simply being Jewish, that is every bit as evil as another, say, Trump supporter sashaying into a church in Charleston, South Carolina, and slaughtering people for being black. Evil, 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 evil. And that is anti-Semitism. On the other hand, I will never agree to any sort of rubric that suggests that criticizing Israel, in particular, their horrifying treatment of the Palestinian people, is anti-Semitism. It simply isn't. And so I don't have any problem with anything that Representative Ilhan Omar said. And all they're trying to do, the Republicans, is to disempower. They are trying to silence women who, and you know, they've smeared Rashida Tlaib, they've smeared Ilhan Omar, and Ilhan Omar replaced Keith Ellison, whom they also smeared as being an anti-Semite. It's not true in any case. And I wish to God we could somehow understand, and we do understand it. If I condemn Israel for using precision-guided munitions to put a warhead into a baby's cradle in an apartment building in Gaza, that's not the same thing as, say, Candace Owens declaring in England that if Hitler would have just stayed inside his borders and been a nationalist, everything would have been okay. Because that exact thing, you know, happened. From Marty. Bob, you anti-Semitic topa! Use of Klingonese serving as an obligatory Star Trek reference. Pata! Yes. Lee in New York. Cigarettes and surgery. There's a difference. Low-tar cigarettes are bad for you. Minor surgery is good for you. Glad to know that Agnes's minor surgery makes her healthier. We're hoping it does. We are hoping it does. It was certainly remedial. It remains to be seen how, it's going to take a little while to heal. So, yeah. Oh, where to go with all the madness? I was all ready for Moorhen Monday. And, you know, it just didn't work out. But when that happens, you wind up with a backlog of stupid. And when the stupid backs up, it gets all over the place. And you just don't want that. Because it's not good for any, no. Yeah, see, Monique's got it all in order. Until these bastards condemned Trump for saying both sides are equal when people were chanting, Jews will not replace us, fuck all of these cowardly hypocrites. And I will convey your best wishes to Ms. Agnes, Monique. Thank you very kindly for that. So we do have no small amount of work to do. And I guess I'm inclined, just because, well, it's here, and it's part of the ongoing, deeply complicated, complex relationship that those of us who are not maggots and have functioning human brains have with our lives here in almost level West by Cole Trump Virginia-stan. Let me go back to the Ilhan Omar story for a minute. Hung Like Jesus says, methinks the saddest part about that apology is Israel's treatment of Somali Jews and sub-Saharan Africans. Omar was right, and all you need to do to silence any Israeli criticism is scream anti-Semite. And it's not about the Jews. It's about the behavior of the nation, the country of Israel. They are wildly different. They're just different subjects. Here's what burns my butt, Bob, says Scott in San Diego. It's good to see that Representative Ilhan Omar apologized and also clarified what she was getting at. And she's correct. Special interest groups make campaign contributions to both Democratic and Republican politicians with the hope that it will result in legislation that's helpful to those special interest groups. It is not new. It's been going on for years. From A to Z, each and every one of these groups engage in this, though in recent years the practice has grown like cancer on the American body politic. What Ilhan Omar said was, anti-Semitism is real, and I am grateful for Jewish allies and colleagues who are educating me on the painful history of anti-Semitic tropes. My intention is never to offend my constituents or Jewish Americans as a whole. We have to always be willing to step back and think through criticism, just as I expect people to hear me when others attack me for my identity. This is why I unequivocally apologize. At the same time, I reaffirm the problematic role of lobbyists in our politics, whether it be AIPAC, the NRA, or the fossil fuel industry. It's gone on too long, and we must be willing to address it. Well, you got to wonder how the butt-hurt Republicans will spin that into, Meanwhile, let me, like I said, get back here a little closer to home to almost level West Baikal Trump Genistan, where we might have a somewhat better example of someone behaving in a racist manner. Yes, I think we do. And it's quite close to home. He is, of course, a Republican. He is, of course, a member of the West Virginia legislature. And he is, of course, a minister of the gospel, an alleged servant of Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate Nazarene rabbi. His name is Keith Porterfield, and he finds himself having a bit of a bad day. No, Monique. That's not Joe Manchin, oddly enough. He's a maggot by the name of Keith Porterfield. He comes from the district where Dr. Bill ran for the House. When you hear these clips, and those of you who are familiar with Dr. Bill, by the way, I need to get Dr. Bill's podcasts up over at White Rose. That's my bad. When you hear Keith Porterfield, just think, if the people of this state had any goddamn brains at all, or that particular district, they could have Dr. Bill O'Brien representing them in Charleston instead of this hoodly-doo. This is one mean, stupid, racist, bigoted, homophobic freak. In other words, he's a Trump supporter. And who he got worked up about in particular was to gays. Yes. There's an LGBTQ non-discrimination bill in the legislature. And there was a committee hearing going on in the House of Delegates here in Charleston, or there in Charleston, here in West Virginia. At which point, on the public payroll, and not by way of excuse, but by virtue of the fact that comparison and contrast is a really good way to obtain something resembling perspective in all of these things, this is not something that Republican Keith Porterfield, follower of Christ, said in 1984 in a yearbook. This is something that he said as an official representative of citizens of the state of West Virginia while in the House of Delegates doing that representing job thingy that he does so fucking poorly. Because of this anti-LGBT discrimination bill, he had himself a conniption. Kittens with crocheted tails. Thundering about how it was a bigoted bill that assaulted his precious constitutional First Amendment religious rights. Because it said the bill would suggest that it should be illegal to, say, kick somebody out of their house for being gay, or fire them because they come out as gay or LGBT, whatever. In other words, Keith Porterfield wants to live in a world where his right to be a bigot and the rights of those who think like him to be a bigot is enshrined as a matter of law. And so last Wednesday afternoon, prayer meeting Wednesday, he went off in a committee hearing hooting and hollering about how the Homer sectionals was, a travesty. One city's anti-LGBTQ anti-discrimination ordinance was a travesty and nonsense. This is when he used the word F-A-G-G-O-T in an actual session of the House of Delegates gathered together to do its legislative duty. He actually cited Milo Yiannopoulos. That's when he used the F word, because that was the title of Milo's college tour back in 2017. Then he went on to say, the LGBT is the most socialist group in this country. They do not protect gays. There are many gays they persecute if they do not line up with their social ideology. Mm-hmm. Socialist homosexuals. Yeah. He's an idiot, and he's a hateful idiot. And I guess he has some sort of constitutional right to be stupid and hateful and mean. I will not refer to him as pig-eyed. The man is visually disabled, and I'll leave that out of the descriptions. Yeah, Monique, I'm right there with you. Monique says, do you think about what grown consensual adults do in their bedroom as much as these Republicans do? Because I don't. No, I don't. I really don't. I probably think about anybody's sex lives less than just about anything else I think about. Because there's so many other things that occupy my mind. Jeebus. So that's where it starts. And then the next day, Thursday last, people like Delegate Danielle Walker, who was there in the committee hearing, stood up on the floor and denounced him. And she noted that she has two sons. One of them's autistic and the other one is gay. And she said her sons were not comfortable coming to watch the floor session on Thursday because of the hate that was stirred up by Delegate Porterfield. She went on and said, let me give you a few words that were said yesterday. Behavior, socialist, persecute, agenda, public safety, freedom, protected classes, race, religion, age, sex, disability, harm, live and let live, inclusion, tolerance, intolerant, simple, compromise, values. She said, in the People's House, my 17-year-old son didn't feel welcome because of one isolated instance. He wasn't even in the committee room, thank God, because, yes, my child has autism. No, he would not have understood not to say a word in that meeting. And the cause of all of this was an amendment proposed by a Republican, of course, a guy named Dean Jeffries, that would have wiped out city ordinances that protect the LGBTQ community. And a lawyer for the House of Delegates told the committee that that amendment would forbid cities from drafting LGBT ordinances and would make would render pre-existing ordinances non-functional. Here's the good thing. The amendment got put down. So that's at least the upside. And the there is an amendment to the State Human Rights Act that's been offered by Democrats. See, that's the difference. That's one of those differences. And the differences are real. And no, greenies, the Democrats and the Republicans are not different sides of the same coin. They have completely different approaches to the idea of governing and even the idea of what it is to be an American. It's a very, very small, very, very, very white tent that the Republicans live in. At one point in time, Keith Porterfield, according to the Charleston Gazette, said that he ran for office primarily to oppose a bill that would prohibit conversion therapy of gay children. He likes conversion therapy. This is a horrible, horrible human being. But it gets worse. Lots worse. Because Porterfield then compared, well, here's the quote, the LGBTQ is a modern-day version of the Ku Klux Klan without wearing hoods with their antics of hate. Now, see, there's at least two groups who should be infuriated by this. The people against whom it was directed itself, namely the LGBTQ community, for being compared with a terrorist hate group that has murdered countless thousands over the last 150 years. And the people who were the victims of that terrorist hate group and received the murders, had the murders perpetrated on them by that terrorist hate group over the last 150 years. That would be the African American community, and yes, the Jewish community. And of course, the Klan were rabidly anti-socialist, anti-communist. Hey, wait a minute. Who's out there running around hating on socialism? Oh, wait, the same political party that provides cover for neo-Nazis and Klansmen. Funny how things never change. So we got the Klan reference from Keith Porterfield. And again, this we could dismiss this as, well, that's just one dumbass hillbilly legislator Republican maggot from West Virginia. That's an outlier. Not all Republicans. As Brother Deacon Asa points out, goddamn, Bob, this is going to be brand new information to gay, socialist, capitalist-hating homosexuals like Tim Cook and Peter Thiel. No kidding. But then, oh no, it continued. Because Keith Porterfield is proud of how goddamn hateful he is. I think it'll be so much nicer one of these days when we catch him with a man in his mouth and he has to shut up. Yep. Monique's right there. Name one outward gay group that's lynched a straight person. Well, that number is zero. Monique saying, I see why Trump got elected a goddamn country, of dummies. Well, just remember, more people did vote for Hillary, but we've got a racist anachronism from the from America's filthy slavery blood soaked past called the Electoral College that put Trump in office, and never works, oddly enough, throughout the entire history of this country to the benefit of Democrats. It's always worked to benefit Republicans. Hi, W. We haven't forgotten. But like I said, it gets worse. He was condemned by the head of the Republican Party and the Speaker of the House of Delegates in a pro forma sort of, we apologize if anyone was offended by what, yada, yada. Melody Potter, who is the chairwoman of the West Virginia GOP, did go so far as to call his words hateful and hurtful and said, they do not reflect the values of our country, our state, and the Republican Party. I'm just saying that because I have to say that, because when you get right down to it, all those little fuckers out there running around in their maggot hats, they do reflect their values. Yes, they do. But nonetheless, she said, these comments are unacceptable, and we denounce them. They have no place in America. Mercer County, West Virginia Republican Chair Brenda Miller said, Brenda Miller said he was out of line, Keith Porterfield. Out of line? And she said, this is just wrong. They do not reflect the Republican Party's views and opinions. Bullshit they don't, sister. Stand by a minute. So that's two Republicans. The House Speaker is a guy named Roger Hanshaw, a Republican, because we learned nothing in 2018 from what happened in 2016 and kept the Republicans in power in the legislature. You know, I hate it when people make dumb hillbilly jokes, but damn, you know. Not saying, just saying. But he had a private meeting with Porterfield yesterday. People are calling for him to lose his committee assignments, you know, to be a la Steve King. He should be run out of the House on a rail. But, well, you don't do that to Republicans. But Keith Porterfield said, Well, I don't know why I would be removed from any committee assignment. What would be a reason I would be removed from a committee assignment? And then he tried to climb up on the cross all by himself.
So much hatred and animosity spewed out towards me, and my safety and protection is always something that I'm sure everyone wants to look out for. And we've been under very, very brutal attacks and assault. And but here on my job, I got to make sure that it is taken care of and trying to do some good things in legislation. But would love to talk to you here and let you listen to some recordings of some of the brutality of this group known as the LGBTQ, what monsters they really are. Thank you.
So you still maintain your committee assignments? You haven't been removed from anything?
You'll have to speak to the speaker about that. And here's the thing. I don't know why I would be removed from any committee assignment. What would be a reason I would be removed from a committee assignment?
Sir, just a yes or no question. Were you removed from any committees?
What's your name?
Jake Zucker.
And what's your name? It's just a yes or no question, sir. What's your name? Why would I be removed? I can't answer that question. Remember, he's a follower of Jesus.
Oh, Jake, everything there is a no comment for the journalistic integrity that you lacked in your reporting of my stuff, get Charlie Booth's article on Sunday or Saturday. Probably help you, but if you would, all that there has to be stricken because I didn't know that was you, and I'm totally blind, and I think you've done some very serious dishonor, and you've helped to incite some hate.
Well,
so everything's
your
here. How do you come respond on to the state parties denouncing your comments on the floor?
Who's talking?
This is Dave Mistich from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Just very simple. I'd have to look at what the denouncement is, and I'm sure anyone from the party has not heard the allegations and remarks, the intimidation and the threat. Make sure you get all this. The intimidations and the threat from the brutal monsters known as the LGBTQ. They are the closest thing to the Ku Klux Klan in the modern day. They are a modern day version of the Ku Klux Klan.
Sir, this is Jake Zuckerman again. I'll just let you know that Brad McElhenney and Stephen Hill and Adams are here. But what I would just like is a yes or no answer to were you removed from your committees, and if you do not answer, will be reflected as such.
You do whatever you got to do. Next question.
Brad McElhenney here.
Yes, sir. How are you, sir?
My natural question was to ask if you regret saying the things that you said and the way that you said them, but you've repeated them today.
Absolutely.
So I guess that makes it pretty clear.
I don't only not regret them. I think the West Virginia Democratic president should resign for inciting hate speech against me, my church. I've got things I've had to report to the Capitol Police. The LGBTQ are the most brutal, tyrannical group in our country. They're the closest thing to political terrorism in our country, and they are a modern-day version of the Ku Klux Klan.
West Virginia Democrat.
All right, guys, we're going to move this one away from the entrance and speak.
Yes.
Off.
See, he's the victim. Boy, I tell you what, that white, straight male privilege, that's some privilege is what that is. He goes out, calls people the fucking KKK, demeans them, dehumanizes them, and then when they push back, he's the goddamn victim. Well, like I said, that probably shouldn't have spent as much time on this story as I already have, but there's more. Because apparently he's accepting all invitations to go on the electric radio box or the electric TV machine or the electric interweb tubes, anywhere he can go and spread his toxic hate. That's cold, Tracy. That's just cold. Did he use Braille to find the cross to climb up on? Boy, howdy, I tell you what, I wouldn't want that man touching me for any reason. Mm-mm. No, just no. But no, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian, homophobic bigots like Keith Porterfield, that white, straight male privilege, I mean, we're assuming he's straight here, there's a natural magnetism between him and any nearby cross that he can crawl up on and cry victim over. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Monique says, until 10 minutes ago, I never heard of this fool. Well, that's what we're for here at the Horn, is just to sort of shine a little light. This little light of mine. Yeah. Right. Yeah, Haley, you're getting some relief over in Arkansas. Haley says, and I thought there were some jack fucks in the Arkansas General Assembly. Oh, it's, you know, we're in a constant neck and neck dead heat to find out who's got the bigger bunch of jack fucks. I may have to hang on to that one. Yeah. Monique says, Tracy forever. I wasn't going to go there. But it, like I said, it gets worse. And I warn you now. If this may have an...
this may have an aspect of triggering to it. People who have been tormented for their sexuality or what was perceived of their sexuality, people have been scorned, shunned, thrown out of their homes, beaten up, raped, tortured, and murdered simply for how they love other people. And this guy would love nothing more than to be able to do it. He might not be able to see the agony, but he could damn sure hear the screaming. And so what he said when he was invited on to WVVA, which is the TV station serving his home market of the sick people who elected this fucker to office. Oh, okay, well, thank you. Wait a minute. Cowbell for clarity. That would be the Cock-Clit Clan, Bob. Terrorist AF. Terrorist as fuck. Mm-hmm. No, there may be a triggering aspect to this. Because, it may actually call to mind things that have happened in people's past. But this guy needs to be driven out of civil society. He needs to live up a holler somewhere, where he doesn't have to come in contact with other human beings. People need to cross the street if they see him on the same side of the street as they are. He needs to learn the sound of spit landing on the ground at his feet. This is a terrible, awful, horrible person. This isn't a slip of the tongue. This isn't Ralph Northam standing up and saying, gee, I'm sorry, I've learned, I've changed. I'm not defending Ralph Northam. This is a guy saying, I haven't. What I said, I stand by. I hate the LGBTQ community with every fiber of my being. That's what he's saying here. And so let's just get to the clip, shall we?
Ask you this.
Yes, ma'am.
You have a adorable daughter and a precious son.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if a few years from now, when they're teens, young adults, they came to you and said that they think that they might be gay or lesbian?
Well, I will address my daughter first, as I would take her for a pedicure, take her to get her nails done, and see if she could swim. If it was my son, I would probably take him hunting, I would take him fishing, and I'd see if he could swim.
What do you mean you would see if they could swim?
I just want to make sure they could swim.
What do you mean by that?
That's it. I mean, I'd take them out to do activities.
Okay. So there have been...
That there is some great journalism. No. The alleged journalist in question didn't even remotely challenge his statement, his insinuation, that's called an insinuation, that he would murder his own children. He would murder his own children if he found out they were gay. My God, has that not happened enough in this country? Has it not happened a million times too many? Remember, this guy is completely blind. He lives in darkness. But the darkness he lives in has nothing to do with his ability to see or inability to see. He lives in the darkness of bigotry and hate. And again, just as we say when we ponder people like Steve King, he is empowered in his hatred by the people who actually put a mark next to his name and said, yeah,
That's what I want out of a representative in my state legislature. I'm with him. If you're a member of the LGBTQ community in Mercer County, West Virginia, how safe do you feel tonight? If you're a member of the LGBTQ community in the state of West Virginia generally, how safe do you feel tonight? Because this man speaks for other people. This man gives voice to the silent hatreds that fester in the vicious hearts of far too many people, not only in this state, not just in this region, but in this country. And just wait and see. He will be made a hero. He will be made a hero by the white wing in this country. When he went on WVVA and insinuated that he would murder his own children, and, you know, he's blind, so it's not like he's going to see if they can swim. He ain't going to see shit. He would throw them in and let them drown and have his ears filled with the pleading cries of, "Daddy, why did you do that to me? Daddy, why are you killing me?" And he would revel in it. Because he says all of this with a big, broad smile across his face, like it's something he's proud to say. And in fact, I suppose he is. And the reporter from WVVA didn't even say, "How dare you, sir, suggest that you would murder your own children?" She just blindly moved right on. Let's talk about something else. Jesus. Yep, there we go. Stephen, New York says, let me guess. He's received death threats. And Stephen, New York also adds, one of the things that has always perturbed me about ordinances that proscribe discrimination based upon sexual orientation is that the proponents leave out something that would, I think, increase the support for such laws. Sexual orientation includes those who are heterosexual. In other words, without those laws, it would be legal to fire a person for being straight or to refuse services, refuse to do business with someone because they're straight. If, say, the business was run by a gay person. Brian pointing out he's blind. He couldn't hit the broadside of the Mississippi River. Tracy was struck also by the, "I'm going to look into it." How can he look into anything, Tracy says. Jesus, this is sickening. Bill in Allentown. Subject line, hate. The people who don't want their kids to be indoctrinated don't mind conversion therapy. Hypocrisy reigns large in this country. And it does. It may be the... The very thing that fuels them. James in Illinois says, "I've caught dogs in the act, and if one of them isn't mine, I turn away. What's wrong with these socially stunted misanthropes? I wish I knew. James continues, subject empathy. You know damn well that all of his life people have looked out for him due to his disability. Who's he looking out for? Is that just a one-way street with him? Well, that's how that's kind of how privilege works. Hung like Jesus, pointing out that fucker might be blind, but he ain't missing no meals. Oh, he's a preacher. Are you kidding? He can smell a chicken frying from 100 miles. Preachers wasn't meant to work. Yeah, Monique. Monique says, they have all that power and money and they still hate. They're so miserable. Monique says, Bob, like you, all me and those in my family want is to work, pay our bills, and have fun on the weekend. It ain't a lot to ask, but apparently it's too much. It may not be a lot, but it's still too much to ask. Great googly moogly. But don't worry. If you're sitting out there and you're going, stupid West Virginia. It's everywhere because it's a disease. And it's not even fair calling it a disease. It is learned, let's be honest, it is learned behavior. He was taught to hate this way. Of course, he was taught to hate this way by what? Yes, going to church. So you'll have that. So, but that's not all we got. Oh no, we got a solid couple of hours more of this other crazy, bilious, titanic intellect. But meanwhile, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Arnold.
Hey, Arnold, how's it going, man?
Good, man. Listen, so, I've mentioned probably on the air before that I'm legally blind.
Yes.
My father before me, his mom, my sister, my great-grandfather, it goes back into Italy like 500 years. So... Now, legally blind is really a gray area. It's like living in purgatory. Picture it like this. You can see, so you can appreciate certain things. You can watch movies really close. And, I know what colors are. And I'm kind of lucky, but I'll give you an example. Let's say I had a cashier's job. Let's say I was working at Wally World and someone gave me a $100 bill. You know, you got to use the fucking marker and make sure it's not fake and all this nonsense. I'm too blind for that bullshit, but... I can fix your car. My father was a mechanic. My grandfather, who was sighted, was a mechanic. So it's part of it's in my blood, right? I do radio. I do video production. All this shit is
impossible. Oh, you do it, and you do a hell of a job at it too. So
I've had to describe myself to law enforcement because of the eye motion and things as a high functioning disabled person. And, that makes certain people in my life laugh when I say high functioning, because people who know me know that my vision has never really been in the way. But let me back that up a second and say this. Any disability that anybody has is immediately in the way. It is all that you are. You cannot become something that you're not. You can't put your arm back on that's not there. You can't fix your vision that's not there. You can't fix your hearing that's not there. You are the cripple you are. You cannot change that. When I heard this thing about this fucking guy and his kids, I saw a picture of a guy in a hat
looked at it, just some old fool and some nice blonde-looking, like nice set of legs. And that's, you know, blind people are oversexed. That's true. So, yeah, I saw her legs. I'm guilty of that. Now.
Wait, did you just say blind people are oversexed?
Oversexed. It's true.
Okay.
It's a joke. Look, I was in a high school class when I was 17 years old. It was a history class talking about world history and stuff, right? Teacher says, it's a social experiment. Would you rather have AIDS or would you rather be blind? Everybody in that school, in that classroom, raised their hand for AIDS and not blindness, forgetting that I was sitting there. So I've lived through shit like that. So I can say, as a visually impaired person, about this fucking bigot, that he is doing a disservice to all crippled people, of whether you're emotionally damaged or physically damaged, irregardless of what he said about gay and straight, gay and transgender people, irregardless of that, his lack of empathy for other humans is a direct attack on his own disability. In other words, only a person who was completely broken, completely just the lowest of lowest shit could say that about their own children. I can't tell you how, Bob, you've played some stuff over the years that I've been listening that's crazy, and it's like, wow, I wish I didn't hear that. But this takes the cake, bro, for me anyway. Because as a visually impaired person, all I do is try to help people and solve problems and cure things that are wrong, make ills correct, okay? This is insane to me. I love gay people. I've had bisexual friends. I've had gay friends. I've known people that have, done the...
It's probably not even how you categorize your friends. You have this group, this big Venn diagram called Arnold's Friends. And in your mind, you don't parse it out into there's Arnold's gay friend, there's Arnold's black friends, there's Arnold's...
No, not at all. I went to an inner city junior high school with a lot of black kids, okay? I was like one of the only like white dudes. Like we were a small percentage. And that was a cool experience in itself because, you know,
You got out of your bubble.
Yeah. And see, when I hear a person like this, it's like, look, it's like society, when people are confident, they can look at a disabled person and they can be completely at ease because they're confident. They believe in themselves. They know what life is, the struggles that life is. When you are emotionally broken, when you have low confidence, when you have low self-worth, and you look at a disabled person, you have no ability to have compassion or empathy or rational thought where you can say that person has a struggle. Holy crap. I think my life is bad. Look at what that person is dealing with.
Well,
and as a disabled
person,
I always...
Go ahead, yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you always side with the underdog, right?
Absolutely, man. So when I hear this asshole blind person on top of everything else, and old, like my dad always says, there's no fool like an old fool. Well, that fucking guy is a hell of an old fool because to have to make it to 50 years old and hate gays or people who are trapped in their mind, something else, They were born something that they don't want to be. And no one knows that complexity but the people who live through it. And to try to just say that you kill your own kids, I would drag that old fuck around by his nose and ears. I can't even tell you how mean I would be to that old fuck. No one deserves the right to get on TV and be that much of a scumbag, especially a disabled person.
Well, you know, when I had to watch that clip a couple of times with, and the first thing that passed through my mind and what I wound up putting on Twitter was, 80 years ago, it wasn't, I'd see if they could swim. It would be,
I would ask them if they would like to take a shower.
Because that really happened.
Yeah.
That really happened.
Yeah. In Canada, up until the middle 50s, they killed disabled people because they, and I love Canada. Like, I'm not talking shit now, but it was a social thing. You didn't want to have people with problems in the population. So certain disabilities were eliminated before the people were, and then some people were made.
Then of course there's Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. and his observation in a forced sterilization Supreme Court case that three generations of imbeciles is enough. Is that what he said?
supporting
the forced sterilization of undesirables, because oddly enough, the forced sterilizations just happened to primarily be done to people of color.
Gee, like that's not too convenient or anything. And this is a whole.
They made jokes about them. Okay. Somehow or another, we're managing to work in a little bit of Black history, and I'm not even trying. But they even made a joke. Hold on, talking about Black history. Well, right, yeah. But hey, it also shows that maybe we can be taught. Yay us! Women who went in, African American women who went in for gynecological surgeries, to remove a uterine tumor or something like that.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
The doc just went in and gave them complete hysterectomies. Fuck it. We'll just sterilize them while we're in here. And the term for that was an Alabama appendectomy.
Hey, nice. Unbelievable.
But yet, at the same time...
I know they did that. They did that to certain women with mental illness, too. Like, we had a friend who was here, in and out of here for a while. She was a studier of people with different kinds of mental illness. And doctors would do that when they thought women were too crazy to... it was a thing up in Pennsylvania here where they would sterilize women in the 50s and 60s. Really fucked up.
And yet Alabama also produced the woman who would go on to be called America's First Lady of Courage, Helen Keller. And I guess bringing up Helen Keller is a bit of a cliche, but the difference, because as you pointed out, people have been taking care of Keith Porterfield all his life. I mean, I get the idea that he's not one of these, he doesn't have the same sort of visual impairment you do.
If he's what we call black blind, okay, if he's black blind, now I've seen black blind people. Now, black blind is a term that we use, and that just means they see nothing. You know, I see stuff. I can read at nose length. I'll give you an idea of my vision. If I take my hand at arm's length and turn it backwards, so your fingernails are facing you, right? I can't see my fingernail. But if I bring my hand at the end of my nose, I can see my cracks in my skin and, you know, blisters and shit like that. So it's not like being blind, but I'm legally blind.
So
I never try.
Do you remember the opening sequences to David was it David Carradine's Kung Fu?
I do not.
Okay, well, he's being sent from China to the United States. He studies a Shaolin monk and everything. And there's an old blind Shaolin monk whose eyes are just fucked. Okay, I mean, his eyelids don't open right, and you know, you just go, oh, wow, this is a serious Shaolin monk. He will kick your ass, blind or not.
Right,
and
right.
So Keith looks like that. I mean, he's like, his eyes are, I'll say it, scary.
Yeah, if he's a blind person who has no visual signal, a lot of times the eyes look sunken. And they don't realize what they look like. See, a person like me, with low vision, you know, like my dad before me, my grandmother, we have an idea of what we look like in the mirror, okay? So you want to look normal as possible. We call it Steppenwolf, basically. You go and you look like everybody else looks. You know, you don't come off like a blind person with the cane and all this stuff. Yeah. You come off like a regular, everyday person. I wear hunting boots. If you bump into me at Napa or Walmart, you wouldn't know I was a blind guy because I picked something up to read it. That's why people like this guy make me so crazy, because our job as cripples, all of us, okay, whatever your disability is to go through this life, and we could use people's help. People can help us. That's fine. But you're not supposed to be helpless. And you know what you're not supposed to be when you're burdened with the cross? You're not supposed to be fucking evil, okay? And I battle with this all the time, because I'd love to be a captain of industry, you know, some corporate type, you know, a lot of money. You know why I can't do it? Because I'm not a fucking asshole. I have a hard time screwing people. And I'm sure that rings true with a lot of listeners of this program who know the truth between being a business person and being a normal citizen. In that you can't be both.
Well, it's
you, if
it's
you want to be
why
a good person.
Yeah, it's why there's no Gulfstream 5 out there in the Horn.
So exactly. Yeah,
in the Horn
choir,
hangar. Right. But I think, I compare this guy to Helen Keller, who literally spent her life, you know, as soon as she got some education under her belt, suddenly people said, this woman needs to be heard from. And,
yep.
You know, all at this roughly the same time that the struggle for suffrage was going on. And at one point in time, and I've pointed this out, that, you know, Alabama put her on the back of their state quarter. And there's a statue of her in the Hall of Statues in D.C. Every state gets two statues, and one of them is her with her hand on the pump, I think. You know, where she, through the beauty of her own mind, put together the concept of wet and this is water, and then the W-A-T-E-R spelled into her palm. And so a child who was both deaf and blind completely was suddenly able to speak words. And she spent her life and became, and this is the part that drives Alabamians crazy, at one point, she was a full-on, no-kidding communist. Workers of the world, unite. You've got nothing to lose but your chains. And if I, a deaf and blind woman, can tell you that, you can take it to the bank. She wept and she grieved when we dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, because she had been to Japan and had helped to enlighten, if that's the appropriate term, she had helped to enlighten that culture on its own approach to people with disabilities.
Yeah, it's amazing how we...
I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know how you become this guy. Except for the fact, Arnold, that you have to be carefully taught, as the song goes.
Well, okay, so I look at things like this in a couple of ways, and then I'll jump off because I don't mean to be so crazy. I look at things like this. So you got Fox News. So for 20 years, you got assholes like this that had a – when they get in their car, you know, there's Limbaugh – 30 years, I'm sorry, 87 really. This whole thing began somewhere around 88. So you get in your car, you throw on AM radio. You know, he's a passenger in a car. He's not driving. But that shit gets pumped into your mind. And then as a Christian, when you want to be a good Christian, you know, you get you have somebody who teaches you, who coaches you along. And if hate is part of what makes your life comfortable, well, guess what? You learn to hate. So if I get fed and someone does my laundry and I have to be anti-gay, well – And this is where I'm going to sound like I'm making fun of this disabled guy, but guess what? He's going to go along to get along. So we're going to hate the gays. Guess what? You know, and this sounds terrible because I just got done telling you that as a blind person, all the stuff that I've done and endure and people before me have done and endure, okay? My grandfather, my great-grandfather used to carry my grandmother across the Brooklyn Bridge with less vision than I have. At a time in history when vision would have been much more important on that street survival way than it is now. I got a smartphone. I could just take out my camera and read a street sign. I got Google Maps with headphones. Tell me where to go if I don't want to try on my own. My point is that this guy only really got to be who he is by having to get along. So someone taught him, and it's exactly learned behavior. It's just reinforced. It's a real problem. I can't tell you how scared I am of the next 20 years because of where we are as a country right now. You know, my sister didn't get this joke, but there's these assholes called the Proud Boys or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So the one girl was writing to the other girl on my sister's thing about, you know, the Pride Boys, you know, you're not going to be able to date one or something. Cause somebody said something and then they were mean to him. Anyway, I said, Proud Boys, I changed it to Pride Boys. So I said, what, Pride Boys aren't gay? And she didn't get what I meant. But if, see, this is what everyone has to, words have meaning. You've said that before. And so Proud Boys, you know how quick you can make that Pride Boys? I mean, that's super easy. I mean, a lot of these guys that are white supremacists by me have Dodge pickups, right? So they drive around in these Cummings, these big, stupid, coal-rolling pieces of shit, right? So a lot of those Dodge guys are actually gay. So they have a lot of suppressed... So rather than admitting what they are, they go on this white nationalist thing. They go on this gay hate thing. And they're actually... The whole boy club is exactly who they're exactly without admittal, they're exactly who they're hating on. It's, I guess, self-loathing. However you want to.
Well,
look
and Monique Paul points out, you know, I think we can go back and we can quote Ilhan Omar again. It's all about the money. There is big money in big hate.
And listening who's got a diesel pickup, but honest to God, I mean, most of these people that buy these trucks are doing it as a social statement. They're killing the earth a little bit at a time, and they think it's funny. I have a neighbor with a sign on his tailgate that says, keeping the polar bears warm.
Fuck me running. Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. And now there's that new-ish trend of they call themselves ICE, stands for internal combustion engine, and they like to park at the recharging stations so people with electric vehicles can't charge their cars.
I'd like to go there with my pickup truck and drag them out of there. It's a good thing that's not happening by me. That makes me so crazy. You know, my wife and I, we went for a test drive in a Tesla. We have yuppie-ish friends, one of my dearest friends, very well-to-do, a completely different financially life, you know, but very cool people. They made some different choices. You know how shit goes. And well, anyway, they wanted to drive one of those, so we went for this test drive. You know, I've been around cars my whole life. I was very impressed with the Tesla permit. Extremely expensive. I mean, it's obscene. As far as the price, but you know, the ride is exceptionally quiet, no vibrations. The power is instantaneous, as you would imagine. It's just fucking phenomenal. So what these diesel guys are pissed about is the Tesla can blow their ass off the road for the first 300 miles, okay? The other thing they can do is not make any smoke.
And blow their ass off the road out of the hole, too, because all that torque is right there immediately. No spin
instant,
up.
Dude. Zero to my friend. I call her my sister. She was driving, and we were at the red light with the guy from Tesla, and all of us in the car. And I said, you know, you're a very conservative driver. I said, you're not going to do what I want to do. And she goes, yes, I am. And the light turned green, and she stood on that little car, man. And that thing took. I was impressed. I'm talking race car quick.
you know, like, you can keep your late model Camaro. I'll take a Tesla. Like, dream car, give me a Model S. Yeah. I'm good.
Well, a few weeks back when I was filling in for Malloy, a guy called and told and just was over the moon about his Hyundai Ioniq. And there's a lot there's a lot to like about that car, because the all-electric version has a 100,000-mile warranty, B, a lifetime warranty on the battery.
That's a big one.
And it's an L-ion battery and not a nickel metal hydride or whatever the others are.
Well, that's really good. And I tell you what, as the battery technology comes online, the electric car will make more sense. The real issue is people that have short commutes can adapt that technology right now and not be affected in the least bit. Road trip people like us, you know, you want to jump in the car and do 1,200 miles off the cuff, you know, we're going to be a little harder sell. But I'm right there ready when they get to hot swap technology, where you pull in, you change out a battery in a couple minutes, or your charge time is less than 30 minutes. When we get to that, you know, because, like, you pull up with a truck now, a regular, you know, minivan, whatever, at the gas station, on a road trip, you know, every 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever your interval is, you stop at gas, take a piss, whatever. When that electric charge cycle takes that same amount of time, you know, where you stop and get a burger and you get, you know, you fill the car, when that whole experience is on the same level within a few minutes of each other, that's when that technology will be accepted by everyone. Have to have some.
Yeah, I mean, that's why
we have to make it cool.
Yeah. I don't know how we got from hate-filled Republican bigots to electric cars, but that's the glory of the program, Arnold.
I would love to slap that blind fuck all around. You have no idea.
Now, see,
Arnold,
you're going to send him scurrying back up the cross, hollering about how I've been threatened by the LGBTQ.
Listen, I got to say this. I don't even understand certain things that people need to do. And I have empathy for that. And if anybody doesn't, they're confused. So if a person was born whatever wants to be whatever, I'm dead serious about this. That is in their mind to be decided. That's not my problem or your problem or anybody else's problem. And it shouldn't offend anybody one way or the other. No one's asking you to do it. That's the part that makes me crazy.
Well, I had a friend.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all grounded in religion. Okay, it's the evils of fundamentalism. I don't care what kind of fundamentalism, it's the evils of the fundamentalism, and it is an attempt. And I don't know why we have such a hard time understanding it in this country. It is an attempt by a sect of religious theocratic zealots to force their belief systems on the rest of us. And they hate it when we point that out. The problem is, there aren't enough of us pointing it out. Hey, Arnold, I do have to roll, though, but it's been a great conversation. I really appreciate you yelling.
Yeah, I love this program, and I'm glad you do what you do. And, you know, you, Rick, Malloy, there's a few others out there that do this, you know, thing that, you know, that you do. You know, all you guys differently, of course, but I love this format, what you do here, because, you know, people like me can call up, I can curse. I don't like to just curse, but, I like the fact that I don't have to. When I call into FAST's program, I have to be careful of what I say and like that and, you know, all that. So,
right. I get it.
You know, I don't call into Rick's because I'm producing it. So anyway, guys, thanks, man. Have a great night.
Hey, Arnold, you take care of yourself. Good to hear from you, man. Don't be a stranger.
You too.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Arnold calling from PA. Let's see. Well, we are well into the second hour of the program. We started the program with $435 to raise, and we're still at $435 to raise. So it would be nice if we could knock some of that down. Granted, 200 of that was me not here yesterday. Maybe that doesn't even belong in the total. But that still means 235 to raise to get out of the evening okay. And, yeah, there are still bills out there waiting to be paid. So hopefully some of that will be ameliorated during the course of the program. And, well,
Look, we can talk about Trump in El Paso if we have to or something, but God, I just that line about I'd see if they can swim was so chilling to me, so horrifying, that I felt like it really did need some further elucidation. Let's run over and see what's going on with Tracy. Hey, Tracy. Yeah, I know, it's Tuesday, but it sure shit feels like Monday, doesn't it? I mean, morons.
Well, because I sent you the text message with that story, because I said, what's up with your homeboy? And then you shot back, well, you know his name is Porterfield, emphasis on Porter. And I'm like, really? You know.
Don't start nothing, man. It won't be nothing.
Because, see, you didn't tell me that you had audio when we were going back and forth talking about this guy. And so I'm driving and listening to this guy, and I'm sitting here like, wait a minute. So, being not only black, but also a member of the LGBTQ community. So how does that work, Bob? So I'm as bad as as the KKK. So wait a minute, I'm black and I'm gay. How does that work?
I've been pondering that for a day or so now, and I'm getting exactly nowhere.
Because, you know,
I mean, I'm trying to figure out what has a member of the LGBTQ community ever done to Keith Porterfield? Ever.
That makes him that can compare, you know, us to the KKK, that we're evil, we're tyrants. I mean, the only thing I know really, I'm like, the only thing about gay people, I'm like, was it Monica says, have you ever known anybody from the LGBTQ community to lynch a straight person? Or better yet, have you ever known anybody from the LGBT community to lynch anybody at all? I mean, I'm pretty sure within the KKK.
I mean, we know Matthew Shepard was crucified on a barbed wire fence, but that ain't what we're talking about.
No, and I'm pretty sure there's plenty of members of the KKK that are, latent homosexuals or closeted homosexuals. So maybe he's talking about them.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Keith Porterfield figures Matthew Shepard got what was coming.
Right. Yes. And when you're talking about what he said about his kids,
I'm worried about those children now.
Right. You took it to another level because, see, when, you know, he was asked saying about, I'm going to see if they can swim, I was thinking maybe that's a test, like, you know, how they used to drown witches. So, you know, if you drown, you're a witch. And if you float, if you drown, you're innocent. But if you float, you're a witch. So that's where I was going.
Yeah, that's kind of a losing proposition both ways now, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. Because that's where I went. I didn't go with that he intended on murdering his children. I thought it was just a test. But either way, you know, so if you gay, you're float. No, what is it? See, I screwed up. So if you're gay, you float. That means you're going to be burned at the stake. And if you're not gay, you drown.
Yeah, 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 I know.
I mean, that did kind of, it didn't really outright trigger me because fortunately for me.
By the way, just one thing, you heard the denunciations from the West Virginia Republican chair and the county Republican chair. You know who will never denounce what he said? The Southern Baptist Convention. Because they agree.
Too. Oh, they agree. They definitely agree. Because, you know, hey. But, you know, like I said, I wasn't really, because fortunately for me, when I discovered more about my sexuality, I was a grown-ass woman. You know, it's what, 40? Let's see. Jen and I have been together now. Holy shit. We've been together now for 7 years.
So I was 46, 45, 46. So, you know, had my own home, had my, you know, had a job, you know, no, you know, so even if my family didn't agree or, I mean, didn't approve of my choice of who I want to be, who I wanted to be and who I wanted to be with, I didn't care. Fuck them. Because, you know, I don't have to worry about anybody kicking me out of my home or anything like that. I didn't have to worry about that, you know. And being me living in California or, you know, basically in L.A., even if I had a job, because, you know, I worked for myself as a cab driver, but even if I had a job and later on, you know, and came out at my job or what have you, the chances of me getting fired are nil and none. And even if I had, I would have a whole bunch of legal precedent behind me to get my job to sue the fuck out of anybody who tried. You know? So, you know, I don't live in West Virginia. So there's a whole, I had a whole, you know, a whole lot of backing behind me when I, you know, realized that I was a lesbian. So, but this man, see, when people, you know, Jared and I ever so often have a conversation about, you know, if we would, you know, because she'll be 65 next month. And so, you know, retirement is kind of looming in the horizon. And we're like, well, where will we go that's, you know, cheaper to live in L.A.? And as much as we would want, you know, we can go anywhere and live this a hell of a lot cheaper than Los Angeles, where would we be safe?
Well, it depends on how you define cost.
Right. My safety.
I mean, if gas is 75 cents a gallon cheaper, and houses, housing costs are 50% of what they are in L.A., what does that matter if somebody burns your fucking house down because you're a mixed race lesbian couple?
Right.
That's not likely to happen in L.A.
No. So this is like you said, at what cost? Like you said, what if I could get a house at 50% less than I would pay in L.A. And so what like you said, if gas is 75 cents cheaper.
I mean, I live in a place where I get worked up when a little restaurant has shrimp tacos one day. That's just any day that ends in Y for you.
Exactly, and I told you about the Mexican restaurant with the
the kick-ass guacamole
and the avocado and cilantro salsa.
Bring it.
I mean, okay, these are things that I am not willing to give up. Because my mom lives in Fayetteville.
Let's see if you can hear this sound. Did you hear that?
What's that? What is that?
That's the lid on the yuzu opening up. Mmm.
You add it.
Tangy and delicious.
You might as well just go ahead and mainline the shit.
Oh no, I don't. I make it last.
But it's like, you know, when my mom and her and my mom basically moved to, you know, Fayetteville right about the same time, but, you know, from L.A. And whenever my aunt comes out here, the first thing she does is, you know, she goes to a Mexican restaurant because this is a true story because, you know, we're from California, so that means amazing Mexican food.
Yeah.
So right when they move to North Carolina, they go to a Mexican restaurant.
Not the same thing.
They go and they order their tacos, and the tacos come out, and they're, you know, from those pre-made old El Paso taco shells, right? So,
yeah, it's not, you're not going to get great Mexican at any Mexican restaurant you walk in and where you're greeted with howdy.
Right. So my aunt calls the waiter over, right? Who is, Hispanic. And she says to him, look at here, now I have a question. Now I know good and goddamn well you do not serve food like this at home.
Oh, no, ma'am. No, ma'am, we don't.
So why would you open a restaurant? And she said, so why are you serving it to me? I know better. That's the kind of person.
Well, we've pondered this from time to time. It's a kit menu from a food service. That's why for years and years and years and years, the lunch menu at all these Mexican restaurants all over the East and Southeast. The lunch menu went lunch number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, number F. And that same misprint was repeated all over the eastern half of the United States because it was all coming from the food service. The menu, the recipes, all food service. It's like the proliferation of Chinese buffets. They've all got the same dishes. And I don't mean the same dishes like everybody's got General Tso's chicken. I mean, the General Tso's chicken is the same in every place.
In every single place.
And just a reminder, another thing, you know, here where I am, we have a very humble Chinese restaurant. Okay, Chinese. It's not hey, good Chinese or yummy Chinese. It's okay Chinese, and it really is. It's just okay. Not good, not great. It's just okay. But we're making progress because we're getting Fayetteville is getting its first sushi joint, and its first curry place.
Nice.
And I'm gonna be real happy.
And see, when you say stuff like that, and then I walk out of my front, you know, my front door when I, you know, but what you know what I mean. There's at least three or four or five Thai restaurants, you know. Ramen restaurants, Indian food, Middle Eastern, food, Chinese food. You know, it's not hard for me to find somewhere to eat. And then on top of that, we now have Grubhub and DoorDash.
Bring it right to your door. Yep.
Right. Even if those restaurants don't offer delivery, doesn't matter. You know. Between Postmates, Grubhub, and DoorDash, you know, you're set.
You
get pretty much whatever you want. You're set.
You know, that's a beautiful thing. By the way, you got a message from Hung Like Jesus. He says, "Hey Tracy, my mother lives in Fayetteville as well, and I'm sure your mother has heard of mine." So,
probably.
Yeah.
Probably. You know, you know, like I said, I was triggered. Not so much triggered, but just, you know, like I said, thankful that I've never had to go through what a lot of gay and lesbian and transgender and bisexual people have gone through with, you know, deciding who they are and letting the world know who they are. I've never had to deal with that, but I am a Black woman, so I've dealt with, you know, discrimination and racism, and sexism and misogyny and all sorts of things just because I'm a Black woman, you know. So while his attitude toward gay people, you know, like I said, I have never experienced the outright hate toward, you know, gay and lesbian people. And, you know, but I have for being, you know, Black and a woman. So it's like, you know, it's like I said, so when he was going on about how evil and tyrannical, and the only thing that I know tyrannical about, like, especially gay men, is how badly they go after you when you don't know how to dress.
Maybe that's it.
You know.
Maybe that's it. I mean, you've seen the photos.
Maybe, yeah, see, and I'm pretty sure any gay man, his thought would have clowned his ass just for his wardrobe choices.
Well, Scott in San Diego is trying to sort it out a little bit for us. He says, why does Porterfield hate the LGBTQ community, comparing them to the KKK? First, there's no comparison. If there were such a thing as the LGBTQ clan, they'd have solar-powered crosses and wear 1,000-thread-count, luxurious, form-fitted, vividly colored, patterned, single-stitch sheets. By the way, I don't wish Porterfield any ill will. I just hope his guide dog has the good sense to shit all over his house, especially right in the stumbling moron's path. I think, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, cowbell.
Yeah, there's some cowbell for that.
There's some cowbell. You know, but let me tell you something that did trigger me, even though I didn't even realize it triggered me until this morning. when I was talking about it. And when I was watching, see, last, you know, I woke up, you know, it was not so much insomnia, but I, you know, I fall asleep and then I wake up at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and I find myself, you know, watching television. So first I have a plethora of things to watch. I have stuff that I've saved on my DVR. I have stuff, you know, I can watch on Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime. So I stumbled into Netflix, and because my son's best friend was told Alex about this documentary about Sam Cooke. Have you seen it yet?
No, I want to.
Okay, just that wasn't what triggered me, but it because the only thing I knew about Sam Cooke was, I've loved his music all my life, and I knew that he was murdered. As a matter of fact, I was telling Alex about how my mother was 13 when Sam Cooke was murdered. And not only that, but it happened like not far from where she, she were living at the time. And so it had a direct impact on her because she's like, you know, it was just like, wait a minute, Sam Cooke is dead? And, you know, and woo, you know, and it's like, it just hit her. It's like when I was talking to her about it just today, I said, Sam Cooke being murdered hit her as hard as when Minnie Riperton died for me, because we were both 13 years old when, you know, respectively. So, you know, but of course Minnie Riperton wasn't murdered. She died of breast cancer. But my mom said, you know, when Sam Cooke was murdered, everybody was just like, wait, what? What happened? Because they couldn't believe that he had been murdered and in the manner that he had been murdered because of who Sam Cooke was. And so then, you know, and I didn't think about it again until I watched this documentary, because basically, you know, that sentiment echoed throughout the entire documentary about how he was murdered, because anybody that knew Sam Cooke knew that, you know, I'm not going to go into the details of the murder and all that, because you haven't seen the documentary yet, knew that what happened and the explanation behind it was bullshit. But the thing is, what I didn't know about Sam Cooke is that he was a civil rights pioneer. He refused to play to segregated audiences. He, you know, he had his own record label. I mean, he was just an amazing, amazing person aside from his music. So I definitely... You definitely recommend that you watch it. Now, what did trigger me, and I spent 90 minutes, because I watched that, and then I watched Abducted in Plain Sight. Now,
yeah, I saw what you sent to me about that.
Right. So we have a girl who was not kidnapped not once but twice by the same person. We have the Mormon Church, and we have aliens.
Aliens.
Aliens. So
wait, like Norblap 9 aliens?
Yes. Mhm.
Well, now.
Mhm. And like I said, and two parents that knew what was going on, but was in complete denial of what was going on, because, you know, I want to say face, and it's just. But what triggered me is because this guy that was, you know, completely obsessed with this 12-year-old girl, spent years grooming her. He groomed her father. He groomed her mother. And I'm sitting there watching as there was nobody to protect this girl. And then I just thought it triggered what happened between me and my mother when I told her about my stepfather molesting me and she not doing anything about it. So, and I didn't even realize that it had triggered me until I was talking to my girlfriend about it this morning. And I was, you know, I said, girl, and I told her, this is what happened. This is what happened. This is what happened. And she's like, they were white people, weren't they? And I'm like, yeah, of course they were. And
you had to ask. I mean, does the Mormon part not kind of?
Well, remember, Gladys Knight's a Mormon. And remember, the Mormons changed their minds about black people in 1978 because up until then.
That's when y'all got all fully human and everything.
That's when we became, human because they're only because the numbers were dwindling, so they needed
families
or more people to come, so they're like, shit, we're not having enough kids, and white people pretty much peaked to our game, so let's go after the minorities.
So
black people.
Let's bounce back over to Ralph Northam for a minute because
this is getting kind of
complicated.
I'm sorry. Did you see the text that I sent you about with Don Lemon's face? Wait, did you watch that?
Yeah, I thought. That poor man.
Don Lemon can't catch a break between Northam and Jesse Smollett. I mean, he's just like fuck. Man.
Well, so the majority, and Lee in New York sent this along to me, a majority of African-Americans in Virginia are like, you just leave him right where he is.
Yeah, but then they're going after Fairfax.
Right.
Because, black people.
But now, have you seen this photo? Because I guess your college yearbook in Virginia was just University of Richmond yearbook for 1980.
Mm-mm.
It's a party because it's always a party, and there's five guys in complete hooded up Klan attire.
Mm-mm.
And there's one black guy standing on a table with a noose around his neck.
Oh, no, but with a noose around his neck, I'm seeing this now.
And holding up his drinking cup and smiling. And just, damn. I mean.
Oh, my God. I love it what drives me crazy is when you open up a web page and there's all this shit on it with the ads and the stuff, and you can't see what you want to see because they keep redirecting you. So there he is with the noose around his neck.
Yeah.
See, I have no words. I have, because usually I'm not at home when I call, I usually don't have access to my computer, so I get to see this shit. It's like, come on, guys, really? And the brother's sitting there grinning like, Uncle Ruckus, proud to be there. It's like, look, Jesus fucking Christ. And like you said, and our boy Ralph was, so this question, is this guy famous? Does anybody know who the brother is?
To the best of my knowledge, no. It just, suddenly there is a newfound interest in 1980s college yearbooks in Virginia. For obvious reasons.
So.
Because your odds are pretty good that there's going to be a picture of some guy who's in your government with a Klan robe on or doing blackface or pretending to lynch a guy.
He's just smiling and having a fun time. And he looks like he's having the time of his life. Why am I hearing I had the time of my life right now? And I owe it all to you.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yes.
I know. I know I'm wrong. But this whole with Ralph, my homie Ralph, you know, because, you know, we were talking about this yesterday, and I was so looking forward to, you know, Moran Monday last night because we
and I was too. Like,
I know you were. I know you were. You know, because we were talking about, now we were talking about, yeah, so, you know, they were indentured, so, you know, the black folks were indentured servants.
Right.
King is looking at them, she's like, you mean slaves? Right? And, you know, and he's going to start reading Roots and all that. So, yeah, so
gonna,
you saw the.
Oh, God, he's going to read Roots. Yeah.
So you saw that you see, I sent it right before airtime, so you might not have seen it, the text that I sent with the from saying this is the Ralph Northam's should be, you know, should
yeah, the reading list.
Yeah, of, you know, and I love how it breaks it down to what he should read, broken down into subject of, you know, Reconstruction, slavery, Jim Crow, what else was it? Let's see. And I said to you, I'm like, not only does he need to read, read every single one of the things on his in that book, but on the reading list rather, but I want a detailed synopsis or book report about every single one of the books. I think how many books was it? Like 20. He's going to be in office for like 3 more years, so he has time to read them.
Oh yeah, he's going to be there for a while.
Yeah, so we have because it's about racism.
And he's not kidding. I mean, these are serious books. From Maya Angelou,
Dorothy Roberts, Michelle Alexander,
James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time. Yeah, my God.
I mean, so because the brother breaks it down. He's like, so he can, you know, begin with clarifying what everything is about. So there's the list for the definitions of racist and anti-racist, and then there's the next one is. Once the definitions are clear, be carefully led into racism, you know, memoirs of the past, like you said, with Maya Angelou, autobiography on Malcolm X and all that. And then from memoirs, proceed to essays, James Baldwin, Ta-Nehisi Coates, you know, and all that. Then from essays, move on to the nonfiction monographs, slavery, about the North, about Reconstruction, convict leasing, Jim Crow, the Great Migration, civil and human rights, mass incarceration, police violence, health and housing, voting, and then with all those books listed, he's like, from each book, moves to a lifetime of anti-racist action. So it's like, okay, you know, yes, there are people who are a product of their time, but I don't subscribe to that argument because you were born and raised in the South.
Yes.
You would never be in blackface. You would never go to a Halloween party dressed as a member of the KKK. None of that. So this, I'm just a product of my time, a product of my environment. I call, and anybody with any common sense would call bullshit.
You know, granted, he's 25 years old whenever whatever happened at the medical college.
Were you 25 years old once, Bob?
I was for a fact.
Did you go to a Halloween party in blackface or wearing that?
Apparently, oddly enough, I did not. No, I didn't.
So what were you going to say?
I wonder if, and this is not by way of excuse, I'm just trying to figure out why people who appear to be otherwise intelligent do stupid things. And is this envelope pushing? Is this trying to be edgy? I mean,
well, see, this is like because now there's a big kerfuffle. Is that the word? Kerfuffle.
Yes.
With Joy Behar, because apparently Joy Behar decided to not to. And see, and here's that fine line. Well, it wasn't exactly blackface. It was just a darker shade of makeup. She went to a party back in the 70s or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean...
a beautiful black woman.
Anybody who even did so much as high school or community theater had makeup put on their faces.
Right.
There's a question... There's an attached question of intent.
Attached question of intent. And so... I mean, but I still can't give people a pass. Because
I mean, I don't know why you have to put shoe polish on your face to moonwalk. I mean, if that was so iconic. I mean, it was Michael. It's like, I mean, would you have to put shoe polish on your face to do the crab dance?
Right. Well, here's
the, I'm sorry.
In 1984,
it starts playing in my head.
You know, in 83, 84, when Off the Wall came out. And I went to an all-white school. And during lunch, they have, you know, performances and stuff. And there was a bunch of white boys, you know, dressed, not so much, they were dancing to PYT, Michael Jackson's Pretty Young Thing.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't wear blackface.
Right, and that's the whole point. If you can do the moonwalk, everybody knows you're being Michael. There were so many cues. If you're wearing one fucking glove, you're doing Michael.
And wearing you know, high water pants with sparkly socks and a red leather jacket, you're being Michael.
Yes.
Have you heard of the show Lip Sync Battle?
Oh yeah, I have.
Did you watch? Speaking of which, did you watch the clip?
I saw with the granny. Yeah.
Yeah. Was that the best? Did that just give you life?
it was magnificent, and we talk about moonwalking and Michael Jackson and everything. There's, which video is it where he walks and the squares on the sidewalk light up?
Billie Jean.
Yeah. Okay. So Steve Martin did a send-up of that, not mocking Michael or anything, but just a send-up of that video. And again, the light-up blocks make it clear that this is a parody of a Michael Jackson video. And what makes that funny is when he gets to the one block that won't light up and he just has to step on it several times trying to get it to light. And it's hilarious.
Exactly.
And curiously enough, Steve Martin was not in blackface.
Right. Well, while I brought up Lip Sync Battle, because once I saw Kathy Bates do her Lip Sync Battle with, you know, doing Bruno Mars, like I said, it just gave me life because it was awesome. When you guys get a chance, go on YouTube and watch that shit. It's hilarious. So then I went down that rabbit hole because I had never watched the show before. I'd heard of it and never watched the show. So I went down a rabbit hole and started, you know, watching Lip Sync Battle videos because, you know how that happens. You know, it's like eating Lay's potato chips. You can't have just one. So that I ran across, they were doing a tribute to Michael Jackson, you know, and it was Neil Patrick Harris, Cox and a couple other people, and I think Vernon Cox was the only black person in that tribute. But Neil Patrick Harris did Smooth Criminal. Now he had on suit that Michael Jackson had on, the hat that Michael Jackson had on. Corey did pretty much, because Neil Patrick Harris is probably the whitest person in America or in this hemisphere.
Yeah.
But yet and still, Neil Patrick Harris didn't have the need to put on blackface because, like you said, if you're dancing in Michael Jackson's music, you have on Michael Jackson, the outfit that Michael Jackson wore, and you're attempting, I didn't say he did them, but you're attempting the move. I mean, he did actually pretty good. So it's like, you don't need to wear blackface to, you know, because I've had this discussion with Jan. She's like, well, you know, it's just a costume. I said, yeah, but you don't, you know, you can even if you wore the Michael
intent,
Jackson wig.
Intent. There is an intent, you know, to mock.
There is an intent to mock. So you don't, you know, you can even wear the Michael Jackson wig, but you do not. There is absolutely, and like the, you know, old boy saying, you know, he was Curtis Blow. Back, you know, when Curtis Blow was Curtis Blow, there's certain outfits that he wore. I wouldn't even be mad if the man wore a Jerry Curl wig. You know what I'm saying? And a big bushy mustache, because that's what, you know, it, you know, because let's just face it. Even with the blackface, if he went to a Halloween party or wherever he went, dressed up as Curtis Blow, I'm pretty sure 99.9% of the people there, he still had to tell them who he was, even in blackface, who he, you know, what the costume was, because I'm pretty sure most of those motherfuckers didn't know who Curtis Blow was.
And here's one for you. You know, you asked the question, and I offered some sort of flip, smart-ass answer. Can a black person do blackface? And it took it took me a while, but then I came up with an answer, or at least an example. The young Eddie Murphy doing buckwheat.
Buckwheat. Yes.
But it's not blackface.
But it's not blackface.
It is. It's satire. It's parody. It's comedy. There were some over the top, because remember, among other things. Buckwheat was
he's a coon.
No, he was hypersexual.
Oh, you mean when Eddie Murphy did him? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Because I remember that one scene where the one skit where he's got the two women and he says, "Come on home, we make a buckwheat sandwich." You know.
Mm-hmm. You what?
Wow. Few times I made it.
Back when I actually
if you took a white comedian and put him in blackface to do that same skit. No. I've been doing one of those searching inventory things. Trying to remember. Did I see, and I came up with an example. And I'll be honest, at the time, we thought it was a genius costume. And this is what led me to the reflections on buckwheat. We had a guy come to a Halloween party as Gumby, the Eddie Murphy Gumby.
So he was dressed up, and did he put on the black? Did he put on black?
And he did have it. Yes, he had blackface on because Gumby has a blackface and smokes a cigar.
I'm Gumby, damn it.
Yeah. And you know, and that's the only example I've been able to come up with.
Other than the brother I just read about him. I mean, because back when Black, you know, was at, you know, in the top four, the only way a lot of black men, is to, you know, could actually get work on stage was to put on blackface, because white people just didn't want to see them as human beings. So in order to, you know, perform and be, you know, and get work, they had to put on blackface.
Sure. Because otherwise they would not have been allowed to perform in that particular theater.
Nope. Would not. It's just, I mean.
In 99.9% of instances, it's not complicated, and don't do it.
Right. Just don't do it. Just don't.
And in 0.0000001 instances, you go, well, okay, maybe because Gumby.
Right.
But you know what? If you're that 0.00001%, go buy a fucking lottery ticket, because you're going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah, because exactly. You can't. That's too much. That's way too much luck.
And see, this is, I think somebody pointed it out on the show the other day when we were talking about it. Have you, you know, if a white person being in blackface is so, is okay and it's not a big deal, why are there no pictures other than the brother, you know, when he's sitting up dressed, I mean, at the party with, you know, with a noose around his neck? I find that troubling. Why are there no pictures of white people in blackface standing next to a black person?
Yeah, isn't that well, I mean, for starters, the black folks were probably not invited to the party.
That's what I'm saying, because they were in, and that's my point, they were in a safe space. They were in a space where, you know, they knew that even if, and most, more than likely, especially, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s or whatever, especially at, like, these private schools, more than likely, the only black people that were there were, you know, the circ.
How is it that an actor like Zoe Saldana keeps winding up getting painted green and blue?
Oh, well, she had her own. They had her. We had her. Our own issues with Miss Zoe, because you know, she, when they had her play Nina Simone, and we're still head to the hand to the palm on that one. Because they had to dark it, they had to basically, they put her in blackface. Because as you well know, Nina Simone is a very dark-skinned black woman. So dark, so much, I mean, she was a, you know, her only, one of her only dreams was to be a classical pianist. But because she was, you know, since she was dark-skinned, they told her, that's not going to happen, honey. You know, you're too dark. And like, there was no inference, there was no, you know, ends of, you know, there wasn't like, you know, no, they straight out and told her, you too black, you will never be taken seriously as a classical pianist because, you know, you're too dark and you're not, you know, which means you're not intelligent enough to play that kind of music. And so when you get somebody, and to add insult to injury, because, you know, and Zoe Saldana is, you know, I mean, she's Afro-Latina, but, you know, she doesn't really claim that part of the African part of her heritage. And then to, you know, say, you know, knowing, and to put her in blackface because they had to darken her up. And everybody was pissed because it's like, again, how are you going to darken somebody up? And it's not like, you know, Zoe Saldana is a pianist or a singer, and, you know, so they can use that excuse. Well, she sounds, you know, she plays the piano like, you know, Nina Simone, and she, you know, sings like Nina Simone, so that's why we picked her. That wasn't even the case. You know, she doesn't play the piano, she doesn't sing, and so there's all these dark-skinned sisters that could have played Nina Simone, and they picked Zoe Saldana. And of course, the movie bombed. It was just horrible. And right up there with, you know, the Grammys, because that was going to be my Moron Monday submission, picking Jennifer Lopez to do the Motown tribute.
Yeah, that was weird. And see, and I didn't watch the Grammys. Network television. You know, I might have otherwise, but I couldn't figure out a way to do it. But now I know about the why in God's name was there a parade of Trumpism going on there? The hell was that all about?
The outfit. The woman
with the wall dress, and then somebody I had never heard of before in my life and could have gone the rest of mine without needing to hear of. Rebel Ricky,
yeah.
With his
Horn family, who have no idea, putting it into context, is the fact that the woman that wore the wall dress and had her, you know, Make America Great Again red purse is a sister, and Rebel Ricky is a member of the LGBTQ community.
Oh, by the way, quick correction. I had a note from James in Illinois. Tracy, was Gumby not Greenface? And you know what? He was. And so proof that memories may not work out the way that so I imagine the guy who came to the party was probably in green face.
I hope so.
But the other side of that, as Ron and Raleigh points out, Gumby was portrayed as Jewish, the cigar and his Yiddish-like vocal inflection.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, you know, like we're going to remember everything that happened over 30 years ago.
But so you were, yeah, the woman who showed up in the wall dress she's African-American, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the designer who did
at least she appears to be from the pictures, because once I saw the picture, I didn't want to know anything else about her, so I didn't even delve into her heritage. But definitely, she's definitely a person of color. Let's just say that.
And so, even the designer of the dress said, "Listen, she told me what she wanted. I did the dress. I made the dress. I don't always agree with the because the designer was trying to get away from it as quick as he or she could." Because mm-hmm. he or she was catching some serious shit from the design community saying, "How could you even do something like that? That's right. A career killer."
That's a career killer. It's like those people who, you know, think it's fun, it's a good idea when they get tattoos all over their faces and get those things that stretch out your earlobes. You know, it might have been a good idea when you were a teenager and all that, but try to find a job now.
Right.
You know, you're done before you even start.
And by the way, and then there's Rebel Ricky, who, I don't know, he looks like the love child of Siegfried and Roy, and was wearing, apparently wearing Agnes's 1984 majorette boots.
Majorette boots. When you sent me that, I damn near, I'm like... I'm laughing out loud, and Jan's like, "What are you laughing at?" I'm like, "You wouldn't understand." I'm like, I can't explain it.
And I have no idea who this dude is, except for the fact that he's apparently bi. And so the LGBTQ community was like, "What?" Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, you know, I support Trump because Trump wants to build the wall
and put you behind it, or build you into it."
Yeah, Jesus, and we haven't gotten, and we haven't even gotten to Candace Owens.
No, Candace took it to a whole another level.
So here's the tough question: is granted we're talking about two entirely different subjects, but is there a continuum of awfulness? Can we put Ralph Northam some, and I'm going to try, again, not excusing bad behavior, but can we put Ralph Northam's party hijinks, if that's what they were, in medical school on a continuum somewhere, and then put Candace Owens going to Great Britain and saying Hitler would have been okay if he had just stayed within his borders and stuck to nationalism?
Right.
I mean, isn't she further toward awful?
She's further toward awful than Ralph Northam at this point. Because at least Ralph Northam he's not saying, okay, it's okay to kill a bunch of Jews, you know, because, you know, as long as Hitler was fine, it's just as long as he, you know, had he not invaded.
Yeah, if he'd stayed within his borders and just murdered all the people with disabilities, all the gay men, forced all the lesbians to become pregnant for the Reich, and murdered all the Jews in his own country, Candace Owens thinks that would have been just fine.
Exactly. And then my favorite part of when people were calling her out on this shit, she's like, "Oh, no, you guys just misunderstood. It's these damn liberals, you know, putting words in my mouth and misconstruing my words." Bitch, you said, this is what tickles me about when white, well, I can't call her white winger, right wingers get caught in their bullshit, because the first thing is, "Oh, you know, you misunderstood what I said. I didn't really say, that's not what I meant," and all that. but we have you on audio or we have you on video. So how is it that that's not what you meant? Motherfucker, you said it. It's on tape. It's memorialized. What the, and this is especially for you, Scott, what the entire fuck? It's like you said, when they get caught in their bullshit, then, like you said, then they go running and they climb up on their cross and, you know, poor for me, I'm the victim. Those damn liberals are coming after me. They're so mean to me. You know, they just don't understand where I'm coming from. And you know, it's all lies because that's not what I meant. And then the sorry, not sorry, I'm sorry if I offended anybody, apology. Oh. I'm sorry. Did I go on?
No. That's quite all right. That was very well said. I mean, Jesus.
I mean, see, at least, you know, back in the day before, you know, there was such a thing as, you know, tape recorders and, you know, and things like that and video and film. And when people, you know, so you could get away with saying, well, that's not what I said because there was no, you know, the only evidence of what the person, you know, allegedly said was if a reporter was there to write it down and what have you. But there was, or the people there just can say, well, that's what they said. But then again, it's like, well, no, that's not what I said. And how can you prove that's what I said? Because there's no recording of it. But now we have video. We have people lurking in with their cell phones on the ready to record. Okay, I mean that's just the everyday public. So at any given point, without you even realizing it, until you're on YouTube, there's a strong possibility if you're out somewhere showing your ass, somebody's gonna record it, and you are going to be on YouTube or Twitter or whatever or Facebook for the whole world to see. So you know. People need to realize there's no stopping me, you, or anybody else from recording their hijinks and their assholery. Now, then when, like I said, when they're recorded and they're at a news conference or giving an interview or whatever, it is like, I've never understood that. I have never understood when people are caught red-handed, their ability to say, no, it wasn't me, or I didn't say that. You must have misunderstood. I mean, there was even a song.
Wait, you left out the classic. I'm being taken out of context.
Oh yeah, I'm being taken out of context. You know, like I said, you misunderstood what I was saying. I'm like, no, I'm not always the sharpest knife in a drawer, but I have some sense. And sometimes it does take because
yeah, this is from the Don't Pee on My Feet and Tell Me It's Raining.
Right. I do sometimes have issues with cognition and stuff like that. So sometimes it does, depending on the time of day or how I'm feeling or what's happening with my meds, sometimes it does take me a minute to get it. You know, because I'm one of those people that say, wait. When I say, wait, did he really say that? A lot of times it's not even a rhetorical question. I'm really saying, wait, did he really say that? You know, and I have to, you know, go back and this is one of the things.
Well, we live in an era of madness, Tracy, in which our first inclination is not to trust what our lying ears are
saying,
telling
are
us.
Hearing.
Because, I mean, Jesus, the Keith Porterfield clip. I played that two or three times just to make sure, and it only got more horrifying. And I started imagining that guy's willingness to murder his own children.
This is like when you play that, it had me go back to the whole Kevin Hart tweet about what he would do to his son if he found out he was gay.
And see, you know, that shit exists in reality. I remember way, 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 way back. This was all the way back in the Beckley days. A story of a man in Florida who beat his little four-year-old boy to death to beat the gayness out of him. He was afraid that four-year-olds don't have sexuality.
No, people sexualize four-year-olds.
Right, but he beat that child to death because he thought he was exhibiting some gay tendencies.
How does a child exhibit gay tendencies?
Well, the child didn't.
That's what I'm saying. Now, that one was a rhetorical question.
Incapable. But I mean, it really, really happens in the real world. So when that sick freak, and, you know, maybe he needs to be confronted with some of these stories. But what should happen first and foremost is that Child Protective Services should go into that home and make sure the children are in a safe home, because they've got at least one parent who has evinced a willingness to murder them. I mean, that's when you call CPS, isn't it?
Yeah. That's why, when you get a chance, you know, even if you don't get a chance to watch the Abducted in Plain Sight, just hashtag on Twitter, Abducted in Plain Sight, because there was just, the best one was, there was a person that did a screenshot of their phone, me watching Abducted in Plain Sight, and you see them dialing Child Protective Services. I mean, it's not funny, but reading people's reactions from watching this documentary, I'm telling you, everybody's like, what? Like I said, I spent 90 minutes saying, what the entire fuck? I mean, like, because I just couldn't believe, I need for you to watch it as soon as you finish watching it, you can text me and say, you know, are you really serious? Did this really, really happen? You know, it's mind-boggling. Like I said, the whole Kevin Hart tweet, because basically his tweet said, you know, if he found out, what did he say? If he realized that his son was gay, one of my biggest fears is that my son growing up and being gay, that's a fear. Keep in mind, I'm not homophobic. Be happy. Do what you want to do. But me, as a heterosexual male, I can prevent myself from being gay. I will. He said during a tweet. Seriously,
prevent.
For going on to a
prevent.
Therapy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I guess you can prevent a rose from growing at the end of a rose bush,
like a rose,
by cutting down the rose,
right,
bush.
Mm-hmm.
But a rose is a rose is a rose is a rose, with all due respect to Gertrude Stein. Yeah, Jesus. Well, I tell you what, Tracy, it's been a wonderful conversation, and I've got a couple other calls in and holds on, so I will try to get to them. But you have yourself a lovely evening.
Yeah, I made lemon chicken piccata last night for dinner.
Woo! Oh, that sounds
with
good.
With lots of cake. I added more because I did it with the heavy cream and the lemon juice.
Oh yeah,
and tons of, so because you know the recipe calls for so much, and I'm like, because usually when you have these kind of recipes, the noodles is not enough sauce for me because it's usually kind of dry. So I added more heavy cream and I added like one more lemon, and I doubled the capers and the shallots and the garlic. Tastes even more yummy, so it was awesome. So that's what we're having for dinner tonight. Leftovers.
Those
going to taste even better.
Yeah, those are going to be fantastic. Well, you had a lovely evening, and we will talk soon.
You too, my love.
All right,
talk to you later.
Bye now. And that, of course, is Tracy from out L.A. way. A couple of emails before I go back to the phones.
Someone was trying to dial in earlier on the line Tracy was on. It's open now. I got Kevin in Colorado Springs coming up next. Note coming from Steve in New York. I think I must have had a good bringing up because I didn't really know what blackface was growing up. I'll be honest, I really didn't know how one actually did it until Ralph Dortham said it was with black shoe polish. As I ponder that, it occurs to me that that is such a hassle that you'd really have to be into it to put shoe polish all over your face, not to mention the cleanup. Yeah, there's a certain amount of dedication. And yeah, as Candace Owen, she was channeling her inner Marge Schott, Steve says, who actually said Hitler was okay in the beginning, he just went too far. In fact, I think it was Marty who said, yeah, Candace and her Marge Schott moment. Asa reminds me, Wyatt Cenac, the Daily Show correspondent, once said to one of the shit-eating right-wingers, "You know we can hear you, right?" Yeah, they know, and they want to be heard. Subject line, denial, Lee in New York. From A Guide for the Married Man, Walter Matthau and Robert Morse were discussing how to deny an affair. If Ruth should hear something or should get suspicious, huh? It won't happen, I promise you, but just in case. Yeah, deny, deny, deny. No matter what she knows or thinks she knows, deny it. What if she knows? You deny it. What if she... Deny. What? Deny. Deny. And that would later go on to be made into a famous song in the 90s by Shaggy. It wasn't me. It wasn't there. It wasn't me. Mm-hmm. The Shaggy defense. I have a feeling we're going to go back to Keith Porterfield via Kevin in Colorado Springs. Hey, Kevin. Kevin.
Can you hear me now?
There you are. Yes, I hear you.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No worries.
I had it on mute. I want to thank Arnold for calling in first because I literally was speechless. Knowing what any person of disability goes through, because you're going to be discriminated against one way or another by virtue of the fact you're disabled, whether it's just ignorance or willful. And I'd like to know if this Porterfield guy has been blind since birth or he was more recently blind.
He looks I'm pretty sure I read something where he makes sure and tells people how afraid he is of the homosexuals. Because of his blindness, and I think he said he's been blind. I think he has been blind since birth. I mean, his eyes apparently didn't form up right or something.
Yeah, it's just so hard to imagine that you, because like I said, the one thing that I love about being blind is I cannot see how anyone's dressed, how they look, the color of their skin. I have to judge that person on their words, deeds, and actions.
I'm going to pose something that's really going to probably make a lot of people... let's see. This is me ruining dinner in the Pacific time zone. Tracy, sorry that the piccata leftovers sound lovely, but this is not going to help. If Keith Porterfield... Oh, God, I'm going to go into hell for this. Bear with me, Kevin. If Keith Porterfield's getting a blowjob, how does he know how does he know if it's a guy or a girl blowing him? I mean, maybe tactile at the beard, but, you know, people do electrolysis.
Yeah, and people grow long hair, and people wear perfume. You don't.
Well, maybe not going to hell, but I did just get a note from Arnold saying, "We love you, Bob." I think that may have been Cheryl, but well, I mean, really, I mean, this is a thing.
It's so ridiculous, Egan.
And see, and look, there's an example, Kevin. I just actually thought about how a white winger has sex. And I feel all icky. I want to go and shower in bleach for the next 4 hours, okay? It just grosses me out to even, I mean, human sexuality is amazing, but no. I don't spend time thinking about how other people work. And I just did, and damn. I mean, not only did I ruin dinner in the Pacific time zone, I ruined my own post-show snack.
Well, this is the hard part for me because, good grief, I identify more with any minority group than I do with my own family in many ways because however small, I face prejudices because of my disability.
Sure.
And I could care less what other people do in the privacy of their own bedroom. I could care less who you're having sex with or not having sex with, or if you're having sex. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just so ridiculous. And for that group to be my worry of they're the greatest threat to me and my safety, you know, it's just so, I can't understand it, especially for someone who has been disabled. But I have known, and this was back long before Trump, but it was still at a gay friend that lived here in the apartments with me. We actually were helping him when he had lost his sight, and he was an avid right winger, hated Obama. And I'm like, how can you be that way? Because you know what these right wingers stand for, and without the Democratic Party, however flawed they may be, you wouldn't have any protections based on your disability. You wouldn't have anything. They would have, you know, done away with everything, any kind of protection, any regulation. And yet, sir, they're out there. I just don't know how they can sleep with themselves feeling that way. And as far as, like, Kevin Hart and whoever else was talking about what they'd do if their sons were born gay or became gay or what, that's a not-so-subtle way of telling your child, it's not okay to come out to me. That's all it is. That the way to keep them from saying it, and we all know what happens to gay people who don't have the freedom to come out, and the things that happen to them as a result of that, from suicide to all the other stuff. It just,
I feel genuinely horrible for his children.
Yeah.
Because, and here's the sad thing, it's very likely that the damage is already done.
Yep.
They are already mind fucked.
Sure.
And that's pitiable.
But
it's also factual.
With the fundamentalist religions, this is one of the things they do quite well. They want you to be like them, act like them, think like them, and never say anything that would be contrary to anything that they don't believe. If you offer the least little thought that is not what they are thinking, there's something wrong with you, not them. You're the one that has the problem, not them. They can't acknowledge that they might be wrong in anything. And so, I don't know. Thanks, Arnold, for verbalizing it, because I'm having a tough time doing it even now, and I've listened to three quarters of the show, and I'm still having a hard time verbalizing how disgusted it makes me feel that a totally blind person is saying these kind of things and getting attention for it and talking about throwing his kids in the river to see if they can swim. And I think Tracy's right on with that, with the thinking. You know, that's probably what he was thinking. You know, like in old times, we'll throw the witch in the river to see if she can swim. And it just, I don't know.
Well, you know, I think the value comes not from somebody like me, Kevin, talking about this story, but from people who know some aspect of something similar to the kind of life that he leads, and who can speak out against it. In many ways, though, it is not his visual disability that defines him. It is his intellectual disability, his hate.
Yeah.
His hate. He is not. Yeah. He may be blind of sight, but he is also blind to common humanity.
And also blind to the fact that if his hero Trump had his way, eventually he would come for the disabled as being less than human. The old Nazi proverb, first they came for the Jews, but I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't speak out. And that's what would happen eventually in Porterfield's world.
But you raise a good point there. You know what? Somebody needs to make the maggots uncomfortable over this. You know, because he took great pride in showing up on that TV show where he contemplated murdering his own children whilst wearing his maggot hat.
Yep.
And,
but how many?
You know, and supposedly, you know, I would love to hear, not love to, but it would, you know what I mean. Donald Trump have to talk about how there are some very fine blind people on both sides. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And but then again, how many stories a day do you come across where some maggot is beating up somebody because
of their... Well, it happened last night in El Paso.
Yeah.
The cops had to peel a maggot off of a cameraman for the BBC. The BBC, for Christ's sakes.
Yep.
Shoved him, hit him, grabbed him, because Trump was standing there, you know, talking about how the free press is the enemy of the people some more.
Yep. Yeah. It's, I don't know. I really am at a loss for words, but you're right. Somebody needs to make them own it, but they don't own it. They only see what they want to see. They do not want to see any other viewpoint at all. And in their minds, they're right. You know, and so... I'm going to close on that, Bob, because I really am. I'm almost speechless over this, and it's I haven't come across too many blind people that have been that ignorant, but this Porterfield probably is right up there at the top. That's all I got
to
say.
Well, yeah, and you go down to Mercer County and you look around and go, well. And I mean, it'd be interesting to go and get the numbers from the Secretary of State's office on how he managed to get in to his into office, and the fact that he ran specifically on the idea
of protecting anti-gay conversion therapy. I mean, goddamn, Kevin, he's... I mean, he's got kids, so I guess there's been some sex involved somewhere. But what's going on in his head, in his brain, that gayness or non-gayness, gayness or straightness, is the hill he wants to die on?
Yep.
And I don't mean doing him any harm. That's a turn of that's a term. That's just a cliche. You know, you pick the hill you're going to die on. I can't. I'm like you. I'm somewhat speechless about this. I can't fathom it. But of course I can, because he is an adherent of a fundamentalist religious faith, and that shit breeds there like roaches in a dung heap. It just does. And you know it. Well, Kevin, have a good evening, my friend.
All right, Bob. Thanks for taking my call, and we'll talk to you later on.
All right. Take care, Kevin. Bye now. And we're almost done with the program. This is one of those where did the program go moments. We've got 4:35 to go, or 2:35, whatever. And Tracy has put a challenge on the table. In honor of Ralph Northam and Black History Month, I hereby formally issue the Ralph Northam Reading List Challenge for all those white people who are utterly clueless about the contributions of black Americans to this country beyond slavery, sports, and music. We're a unique, amazing, and trailblazing people that deserve their place in history. I'll end my note with one of my favorite sayings. Every time I teach a white person, an angel gets his wings. Let's hope that soon there will be millions of angels in heaven. So there's a $20 challenge on the table, which would get us down below the $400 mark, which would be awesome if it can be met in the next 19 minutes or so. Thank you, Tracy, for the challenge. Thank you very, very much, and sorry about what I did to dinner. Let's go over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Bonjour, Monsieur Thibault. Monsieur Thibault was the gentleman in my high school French textbook.
Ah, bonjour, Monsieur Thibault. Comment ça va?
No, I didn't get much past bonjour, Monsieur Thibault and Madame Thibault. Jesus, this Porterfield guy, he's a piece of work. Who said God doesn't make mistakes? Now, when he was talking about wanting to find out if his kids could swim, I didn't even think about him drowning his own children. I thought about Noah's flood. But then I remember afterwards, God apparently promised not to destroy the world with water again. Now, if Porterfield were at all biblical in his knowledge and his behavior, he'd already know that. I believe the term in the Old Testament is God repented after the flood. It's like he had second thoughts and turned around and went the other way. But
shame about all those people I murdered. Yeah.
His response to the inept reporter, and that's putting all the Christian charity I can manage in terms of my description of the reporter, about what if your own kids were to come out to you? If he was going to be biblically correct, his response would have been, I'd find out how quickly they could gather up a big pile of stones so my demented friends and me could hurl them at them until they're all dead-like. You know?
Yeah.
God, what a moron. What a stumbling moron.
But again, because we toy with this idea of democracy, Scott, he is a demented moron who apparently represents a lot of other demented morons.
Well, and I've been listening since the very first notes of the opening audio on the show today, and somehow either it slipped past me or I missed it somehow. What is the bug up his ass regarding gay people?
What he went off on originally was an amendment that would have made illegal or rendered moot or whatever local ordinances to protect LGBTQ rights.
What a horse's ass.
You know, so that you couldn't be, you know, fired from your job for being gay, or you couldn't be refused rental property for being gay.
Well, see,
or refused service in a restaurant for being gay, or trans, or you asked the question. Let me just finish it up.
All right.
So that's when he stood up and said that the LGBTQ, and he doesn't even say, he calls them the LGBTQ, are like the KKK. Because they'll attack people who don't, just pure madness. But again, he also ran for office on at least a partial platform of preserving anti-gay conversion therapy, which is one of the worst kinds. I mean, it's absolutely among the worst of snake oil mummery.
The science doesn't support it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it ain't real.
But I don't know why I'm so overwrought about this guy, but it's like, what? See, an ordinance. He's trying to override a local ordinance, if I'm understanding correctly. He's trying to, on a statewide basis, override a local ordinance that bans discrimination. It sort of expands what we've already got, which I would think is perfectly rational and reasonable, okay? I would think, why don't we have this already, just as why don't we have the fucking Equal Rights Amendment?
Right, and just so you can know, he comes from West Virginia House District 27, mm-hmm. Which is Mercer County, West Virginia. And among other things, he has sponsored a bill to create a hunting license, you know, guns.
For the blind?
For the blind.
Oh, God. No, are you kidding me?
No.
Oh, fuck. Merciful Jesus Christ.
Wait a minute. Wait. I don't think I've ever gotten an oh fuck merciful Jesus out of you before, Scott.
Sweet merciful sweet Jesus fuck. Brother John, are you shitting me, Bob?
Porterfield wants to go hunting. I guess he got him some of that there Russian money from the NRA.
Bob, in all the years I knew and hung out around Ed Walker, the late, great Ed Walker, who was Willard Scott's radio partner for pretty near 20 years in D.C. radio, part of the Joy Boys team, blind since age 2, with more talent in his little finger than most sighted people in radio have, I never heard Ed express a desire to go hunting.
I have misrepresented this cat's name. He's not Keith Porterfield. I don't know where I got that. He's Eric Porterfield. Porterfield.
Jesus.
He's done that. And I'm just trying to dig up a little bit more demographic. Let's see. Population. Of Mercer County, WV.
And look up income, too. I would be curious to know.
There are 59,753 people as of 2017 in Mercer County, West Virginia. He doesn't represent the whole county.
Yeah.
But he does represent most of it.
there's a notch that's carved out that gerrymandered out that he doesn't represent, but yeah.
I wonder what the per capita income is in Mercer County.
Well, let's see.
And what the highest level of education is in Mercer County, because there's probably a correlation here.
They
likely buy into the notion that they've been put upon for all these many years by the political elite, the liberal political elite, which is why they ain't got nothing. They don't have the proverbial pot to piss in, I would say.
Yeah, most likely. I'm trying to see. Median income for a household in the county was $26,628. Median income for a family was $33,524. Per capita income for the whole county, $15,564.
That's right at poverty.
19.7% of the entire population are below the poverty line.
Bingo.
28.9% of those under age 18 are in poverty. 12.7% of those age 65 or over are in poverty.
And this guy is fiddle-farting around with people who he obviously is not among them as far as being one. Okay? He's focused, in as much that a fucking blind person can be focused, on prohibiting even the smallest human consideration for someone who is not the same as you. I mean, Jesus. I sent you an email earlier before I found out the extent of his visual impairment. I didn't know what it was, and I figured part of it had to do with his inability to perceive the color red, as in the words of Jesus in red,
right,
in the King James Version of the Bible. Because, and I'm no Bible scholar, let's face it, but I know enough to know that Jesus preached and taught and he healed blind people, first of all. So I'd be, instead of fucking up life for other people, I would be spending my time praying to Jesus to bring some change in my vision situation if I were Porterfield. But be that as it may, he obviously, even in the Braille edition, has not read the words of Jesus, or if he has read them, he's never taken them to heart in any way that you notice.
And he is a preacher.
Oh, no. Oh, no, a gun-toting, gay-hating, stumbling into things preacher on top of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Dementing further generations with his horse shit.
Yeah, what you said a minute ago reminded me of the story about the little boy who was born, and he all there was of him was his head. No arms, no legs, no torso. And every night he prayed, "Dear Jesus, please make me like all the other little boys." And one morning, he woke up, and there he was. He had a torso. He had legs. He had arms. And he was so overjoyed, he ran out in the living room, and he said, "Mommy, look. Daddy, look." And then he said, and then he just kept going, and he ran through the door, and he ran out in the yard, and he was, "Yay, look, look, I'm just like all the other little boys," and he ran out in the street and got hit by a bus.
And there you go.
And the moral of the story is...
quit.
While you're ahead.
Bingo. Give yourself a cowbell.
It's an oldie, but a goodie.
Yeah. You know, I used to have hope for this country.
I mean,
but when I hear of people like this and presume that there are voters who put him into a place of responsibility, and with all of the things facing this country, the most important thing at the top of his agenda is this horseshit, it's like, it makes me glad I'm in California, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't mean to go yeah, for people who live in less advanced, enlightened parts of the country. But I don't know. And one other thing, and this is kind of a TV viewing tip. I'm going to watch Abducted in Plain Sight just because Tracy painted a compelling picture, and we were comparing notes online earlier about the Sam Cooke documentary, which was amazing. I was flipping around and found it quite by accident the other night and watched it.
Well, that was where there was a question. Where is it?
It's on Netflix.
Okay. All right, very good.
It's like the double killing of Sam Cooke. If you just put Sam Cooke with an E, you'll find it, you know.
Oh, and Kevin in Colorado Springs wrote back in with regard to Eric Porterfield's hunting bill. Now, Bob, we blind folk deserve the same right to kill Bambi and instead accidentally kill and maim others with a gun just as much as any other gun-toting hunter in the woods.
Yes.
This is... The hunting bill has apparently engendered some curiosity. Silent R. Lamar asking, "Oh, please, Bob. The blind guy wants to hunt. Sorry, he must want the animals to wear a bell of some sort. Please, what?"
Yeah. Well, the hunters need to be wearing bells, because if they're a bunch of blind dudes in the hunting club out in the woolly wild backwaters of West Virginia, orange vests and red hats are not going to do it.
So I'm trying to figure out what kind of manliness issue this is, because again the visually impaired members of this community can straighten me out on it. Under the best of circumstances, wouldn't he be sitting somewhere with a gun, and he'd have a buddy who would aim it for him and say, "Now squeeze the trigger." So the only thing he's actually doing, he's not hunting, he's just killing.
Yeah.
He just wants to be as a person who is visually impaired, he just wants to be able to kill something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much the end of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I
mean, the tracking, the stalking, the laying in wait, the butchery, the cutting, the caping of the hide, none of that's going to happen. He wants to be the guy who pulls the trigger that kills the animal, because he needs to kill something in the name of Jesus.
Well,
I mean, have I got it? Are we close?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, but when I thought you were kidding when you talked about the hunting bill, but when you said that it was for real, my mind immediately went to the hunting song by Tom Lehrer. Look that up. It's on YouTube, I'm sure. But the TV viewing tip earlier, you were talking about black people in blackface. On YouTube, if you look vaudeville PBS, there's like a 2-hour documentary. It's excellent, from the 90s, about vaudeville, which blew me away. And there's a segment in there about black vaudeville entertainers. Among them was a gentleman named Burt Williams, and I sent you a little bio of him. W.C. Fields, with whom he worked in vaudeville, said he was like the funniest man in America, which should give you some idea of Burt Williams' aptitude in the world of entertainment and humor. But at one point in his career, in order to appear on stage, he had to black up, because the audience would not stand for an unmade-up black guy standing there doing whatever his field of entertainment said to do. They had to have that layer of cork. Burnt cork is what a lot of them used, or stage makeup. And W.C. Fields said he was not only the funniest man in show business, but also the saddest. Because as demeaning as that was for Burt Williams, it was the only way to do what he was talented at and loved to do. And his legal name, first name, was Egbert. And I have a feeling that's where Fields got Egbert Soussay, I believe was one of the Fields character names. Isn't that right, or am I misremembering? It was Egbert something.
Soussay, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Accent grave over the E.
Yeah. But, God, this has been a stellar program, Bob.
Well, I've got one last piece of detail on Eric Porterfield.
Okay, but just to say about how stellar it was, now would be the moment, if you like dialogue and content and conversation and entertainment and information such as what you've heard for the last 3 hours, now would be the time to send a few bucks. If everybody does just a little something, it'll add up to a big something. So that's the end of my fundraising pitch.
Well, thank you. That's mighty nice, Scott. And by the way, thank you to Charlene for meeting Tracy's challenge. So now we're down below 400. We're down to 395, which means that tomorrow's 595 for prayer meeting Wednesday, which I'll try not to think of as Tuesday because I'm completely addled because I wasn't here yesterday.
It's like a Monday holiday. They fuck me up every time there is one.
Just to give you an idea of the people who sent this wad of hate and fear to the state house. The last election, he was elected with 21.1% by he got 8,845 votes. The nearest Democrat got 2,639.
Jesus.
In the primary, however,
8,000 how many?
He got 8,845 votes.
I didn't know there were that many banjo boys in the backwoods of West, by gosh, Virginia.
But the nearest Democrat to him got 2,639. There are three delegates in that district. He came in second. But this tells you something. With 19.8%, he squeaked in to the primary with 1,858 votes.
That
means there's 1,858 people who would be probably be inclined to murdering their gay children in Mercer County, West Virginia. But that number swelled to 8,800 probably because he was wearing a maggot hat.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's a complicated love-hate relationship with this state. The rest of the country decided to take a new direction, turned the House over to the Democrats, and here they ran to the polls in November 2018 to send a guy to the House. Jesus jumping Christ.
I wonder if his...
who would kill his own children if they were gay.
If he has a church, a congregation, I wonder if they have a website. I would be interested in...
The way it is around here, it could be a little church in the countryside. And I mean, it's not like this guy has a degree in theology.
What was your first clue?
I know.
Yeah.
He's been called on to resign, of course. He's not going to because he's empowered.
Who called on him to resign?
Democrats.
Oh, all right.
But here's the funny thing. That same piece of legislation that he opposed, and by the way, where he sits there in the House, he's got one of them little urine-colored snake flags.
Oh, God.
But anyway, he's got a Twitter account, @E_Porterfield. He claimed on Twitter that the LGBTQ have exercised hate crimes and threatened my safety.
But
well, that's projection, I think, is the psychological term. Who is threatening whose safety here? I mean, when it comes right down to it, here you've got an elected official, albeit on a state level, but elected official who is madder than Moses, okay? Crazy enough is not legislation that would allow gun-toting visually impaired people. No. Crazy enough is legislation that would eat into core human rights that any place in the world would recognize without batting an eyelash. The guy is absurd. He's...
Yeah.
They say that sometimes blindness at birth can be caused by a number of things. It can be the mother having an undiagnosed social disease can cause issues with blindness. It can also be caused by improper diet during pregnancy on the part of the mother. Can also be caused by an insufficient amount of oxygen. One wonders if it could be that or all of them with this fellow. How old a man is he? Until you mentioned him, I hadn't heard of him.
He's a freshman member of the House. And by the way, in 2012, he founded, what a grift, Blind Faith Ministries.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And so 3 hours ago, he tweeted, "In my office, thinking about my wife and children, I was thinking that if my kids did indulge in any type of sinful life, I would love them, pray for them, fast over them, and seek the Lord to watch over them."
He's an idiot. We're all screwed, Bob.
Yeah, well, and see, that's the thing. He equated being gay with being sinful. Jesus Christ, what a sick
person. And Dr. Bill ran against him?
Dr. Bill ran in 2016.
Oh.
I don't know if he was on the ballot, but the thing is, there's a possibility if they'd had the common sense to elect Bill, they wouldn't have elected this guy.
Well, the West Virginia voters from here on in need to get on their bony knees and pray for discernment and wisdom. Amen.
And all God's children said amen. Scott, have a good night, man.
You too, Bob. Take care.
Later. Bye now. And so we come to the end of the program. Ran over a little bit, but hey, I missed last night, so sorry about that. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Oh joy. And who knows? Well, I've already got a list for tomorrow. Jesus. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air, our subscribers and folks who kick in during the program. Thank you so much again to Charlene for meeting Tracy's challenge. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve and Brother Deacon Asa in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.